football on off the ball.
If you took the rules today and applied them to the Leeds-Liverpool games, we'd have finished... Well, Johnny wouldn't have been on the pitch. Billy wouldn't have been on the pitch.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Power Rankings on Off the Ball with Harvey Norman, official staff sponsor of the GAA.
Final hurling power rankings of the year. The intercounty season is over, Will and Rachel. We're so sad. What a terrible day. Like, I mean, yesterday, Sunday was brilliant. It's all Ireland final. What a festival of hurling. Yesterday, we look back at it and all. And today, it's more like, God, there's no more hurling. There's Camogie, all right, in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I was so disappointed about the fact that there's no more hurling. I said I better do the power rankings live from Semple Stadium. I just thought, we'll soak it in. This is my only way of getting some of the hurling fix in today. How are you, lads?
Some people would say Rachel has gone to the media day for the Camogie All-Ireland semi-finals, but the reality is she just wanted to go to the home hurling today.
So it is a big weekend. We've got the Camogie semi-finals on Saturday and then the small matter of the All-Ireland football final on Sunday. Those of you who've been listening might even be tuning in just for this. Because, of course, as always, this year, Harvey Norman have given us tickets to whatever the next game in Croke Park is. Well, the next game in Croke Park just so happens to be the All-Ireland football final this Sunday between Mayo and Kerry. So, if you've any gripes with Will's selections that we're about to hear on the power rankings, you can please get in touch off the ball WhatsApp 087-9180-180. Email enter at offtheball.com. And just let us know what you would change and why. As I said, Harvey Norman very kindly given us two tickets to give away for the All-Ireland football final this weekend in Croke Park. So do get in touch with that. All said, we're going to concentrate on the hurling for now. Will we just dive straight into the power rankings and then we'll talk about the final from there?
Mm-hmm. Go for
obviously,
it.
No changes in page two. And here we are, the top four. That was all that could change. And here we have it. Galway have gone up one. Is that a mistake?
I think that might be last week's graphic.
Okay, no changes in the power rankings this week. It's the same one. You can pop it back up there again, Dara. It's Limerick, obviously on top. Galway keep their place at number two. Cork at number three. Clare at number four. Yeah.
Turns out we just had it absolutely correct before All Ireland final weekend.
Did we?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, do Galway. You even argue about the Galway staying in second part?
I think we're looking at a full season. Mm. And Galway won Leinster.
Yeah.
And were very impressive in the All-Ireland semi-final.
Against Cork, who sit third.
There was a feeling all year, I suppose, that like Munster, there was a bit of a gap between the Munster teams and the Leinster teams. And Cork, we should probably get into it maybe.
It was a fair gap when the Munster team played against the Leinster champions in the semi-finals. Go on.
But whether or not... Did Cork give Limerick a better game than Galway?
Oh, they certainly did.
Did Clare give Limerick a better game than Galway?
They did. But...
That's all I'm saying. Yeah, I'm not arguing.
All-Ireland finals, in fairness. You know, have to take that into consideration as well.
Yeah.
It was an All-Ireland final?
Yeah.
Yeah. But that means that, like, are Galway the second best team in the country if they can't turn up in an All-Ireland final and put... And, like, in any way... make a good account of themselves.
So I think the counter to that, Mick, is the fact that Limerick performed better in that All-Ireland final than they did in the semi-final. I know Clare were obviously a bit of a factor in that with the way they played and knocked Limerick off their game. But I am
Clare did something to knock Limerick off their game. We talked about it on the show last night with Jamesy and Pat Ryan. Galway did nothing to change, to surprise Limerick. They did. Limerick were ready for Galway and Galway said, here you go.
Yeah, 100%. Like Sean Flynn, the analyst, made a good point that basically Galway got out-Galway'd by Limerick. Limerick almost changed their game plan, classically Paul Kinnaird style, to basically do what Galway were doing to Cork in the semi-final, but just Limerick did it at a much better level than Galway were able to get to. So therefore, what Micheál Donoghue was saying was a baptism of fire for the young players. They basically got outplayed from start to finish. I think the last time the teams were level was the 12th minute. After Jason Rabbit's point, and then after that, Limerick just took complete and utter control for the best part of an hour. But this is just what Limerick tend to do in finals. Like, if you consider all of the six that they've won, the average winning margin has been 8 points. I was listening to Barry Nash yesterday. He was disappointed that they hadn't won by 14 by conceding that late penalty. That's the mentality of this Limerick group, that they actually care that the game came back to 11 points by the end of it. I do appreciate your point that obviously Cork ran the Munster final down to a point. Cork beat them earlier this year. So Limerick played 14 games this season. League and Championship, lost two against Waterford and against Cork, went on to beat them in the second occasions that they met them later in the season. So I do appreciate that those teams were closer than Galway were, but at the same time, I think the fact that Galway beat Cork, who I don't think too many people would disagree with the third best team. We had a bit of an argument with Colm while you were away, whether Clare actually came off better for the season than Cork because of Clare's relative performance in the semi-final, but Galway were a better team than Cork. So for my power rankings, Mick, they stay in second place.
Rachel?
Yeah, to my point in saying that it was an All-Ireland final, I think it's hard to compare Clare's performance and Cork's performance against Limerick because they weren't dealing even with the nerves of an All-Ireland final and what that might bring. You know, it's easy to say, and the conditions of the Munster final were so different to the beast that is facing Limerick in a final in Croke Park. So that was more what I was coming at from that angle. And like, yeah, as a neutral, you were there, and even in the first 5-6 minutes, you're thinking, oh no, like Galway are in trouble here. And that they did nothing to stem the Limerick side, like your point. I almost thought that they kind of moved away from how they'd been playing all year a little bit. And it's not like anyone did anything drastic. You know, last year we saw the sweeper, we saw Willie Connors going out to pick up Dalton. It was a bit unexpected. We didn't see anything hugely unexpected on Sunday, but just a Limerick team that they've been threatening this performance all year. We kept hearing them say, we haven't put a 70 minutes together, we're doing it in training. And you hear that sometimes and you're like, are you though? But clearly they have been. Mm. And they've been making maybe some uncharacteristic mistakes throughout the year that were keeping games a little bit closer than they actually seemed to be. And it was just an absolute complete performance, utter domination. So if you can hear that now, sorry, they're cutting the grass quite close to me here.
No, it's okay. Yeah, that's like, I kind of agree, to be honest. I mean, I'm a devil's advocate point, obviously, to analyse and scrutinise Will's power rankings, but we're settled on that now. The final ranking for the year is Limerick 1, easiest choice of all time, Galway 2, Cork 3, Clare 4. I think Clare had a better performance in the post-Munster final, and I think you're giving Galway an awful lot of credit for one performance and not giving it to Clare. However, I do think over the course of the year, including their game against each other, Cork deserve to be above Clare for this year. So,
yeah,
again, I'm just saying, I may there's different ways of doing it, and look, there's a lot of ways. You're basically analysing four teams either way. Going back to Will's point, Rachel, about the average win and margin in the All-Ireland finals, we were talking about this at the show last night, myself and Arthur, but like Limerick's ability to turn it on in the final, we were thinking back about the two COVID finals, the Cork and Waterford games, the second Kilkenny game, and again this year. So that's 4 or 6 All-Irelands where we came away kind of with this sort of feeling of there's nobody in their league. Nobody will ever stop Galway or stop Limerick. But when we look back on those years, they had loads of close scrapes. They've never been this kind of dominant win every game by 10 points team. But their ability to show up at a final and have their best performance of the season when, like you point out, maybe Galway aren't at the pitch of it. There's a bit of nerves. There's a bit of everything. They're going the other way. It's such an impressive trait in a team. Like,
I think it's, you can see it. John Fogarty had an article in the Examiner either this morning or last night, and he spoke to Dara O'Donovan at the hotel yesterday morning. And he was very honest about, after his semi-final performance against Clare, he knew he wasn't going to make the starting 15 for the All-Ireland final. But he said that they had a training session during the week, and he spoke to the players and said, this doesn't have to be a scrape by win in an All-Ireland final. He said, we don't have to win by 1 point. We can put the foot down their throats, and why not make this a huge margin? I mean, to have that attitude going in to an All-Ireland final, it's not just we'll win at any cost. It's like, yeah, of course we can win, and why not win by 11? Like, we can. So that's the belief that they have in themselves. And it's almost not taken into, you have Kinnerk taken the opposition into consideration in terms of tactics, but it really feels like they just focus on themselves a lot, and they're not worried about what other teams are doing, and they just have complete and utter faith in what they're going to do. And it's probably a testament to Limerick that when they're hurling at their best, they put the foot down. It probably would have been one of my biggest criticisms of Cork over the last couple of years, that even if they're beating a team, they'll often let someone back in, and they might pull away again in the final four quarter. But what we saw from them right there at the weekend was just, pure belief,
non-stop. And we're talking about a team with these unbelievable hurlers. We saw like Aaron Gillan at his best again. Hegarty not scoring, but like so dominant in so much of what he does. The O'Neill, English, O'Connor, what an addition they've been over the last couple of years. Then you have like Keane Lynch, one of the most majestic hurlers we've ever seen. You've got Will O'Donoghue, who's just like slots in the centre back. Kyle Hayes and Dermot Burns, like two of the best wing backs of all time, right? This is how great a hurling team they are. But your Harvey Norman stat of the week points to the reason that they're successful being far beyond how good hurlers they are.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's crazy. So, thankfully, Ray Boyne went and did all of the totting up of these numbers. But even for someone who was watching the game would have probably seen this in real time anyway. 137 blocks and tackles by Limerick across the 70-plus minutes. And this has been defined by Ray when it comes to a swarm tackle as three or more players getting around a single opposition player to force a turnover. 29 swarm tackles during the game from Limerick as well. They got 117 from turnovers on Galway during the match. So, like, after the game, John Colley was saying in the press conference that it was just this kind of vociferous need to work and to outwork the opponent was kind of the key ingredient when it came to winning this game. And, like, the stats bear all that out as well. Like, if you were going to turn over your opposition in the way that they did as well to get 117, work rate is maybe a word that gets thrown around a little bit too often, but it just goes to show that those players, the vast majority now who've got six All-Ireland medals, have still got that hunger to go after the opposition. And so often what would happen is Derek Fahey would puck out the ball. They would get to a certain point after the first ball was won from the puck out, and next thing, three or four Limerick players would just come and swarm me in a position where they knew they could turn it into something productive up the other end of the field as well. So none of that was missing, and maybe we didn't see that necessarily at different stages of the year, but in the final, it just all came to the fore. And James Scale used the phrase last night on the Hurling Pod, they were like a boa constrictor at different times, Limerick. It was like, when you feel like you're being suffocated in the game anyway, next thing the press comes back on again and Limerick are turning over the ball. And it just felt like at different times Galway couldn't get out. And it almost always resulted in a shot as well. Like, Limerick had nearly 50 shots during the game. They almost hit their normal number as well, Mick. They usually hit 30 points in All-Ireland finals. One short of that. So they've hit 30, I think, in five of those All-Ireland finals, which is like absolutely remarkable. Mm.
And they had 121 in their previous two games, which I think Limerick, you know, to your point about how they were playing in other games, they weren't hitting that part of their game for sure. But there was one bit of it I thought was exemplified. Garrod Hegarty won an unbelievable ball under the Cusack stand, and he lost it again. It was kind of clumsy, you know, and I can't remember. And I remember thinking that was the kind of indicative of his game. It was like something wasn't happening after he did something brilliant. And he lost it again, and Galway, I think it was Ronan Glenn, like, I couldn't be sure, went up or whatever, and Hegarty just flicked it off his hurl, you know, off the solo, went on, won the scrap for it then, and then laid a hand pass through to whoever the on Russian runner was, and it was a score. And I just thought, like, that's everything about Limerick. Sometimes Will says, Rachel, that work rate is a cliche or can be overused. It's also normally a little bit less obvious, I suppose, to the casual observer, but you couldn't help but see that that's what was winning it. It was forwards defending that won the All-Ireland for Limerick on Sunday.
Yeah, and it was the speed at which they were getting numbers around the ball. Like, it wasn't just one man holding up, and, you know, we see that often enough, like, one person will hold them up and then the other two might come in as reinforcements. They were all getting there at the exact same time, and the technique that they were using to tackle as well was just phenomenal. Like, I don't think they were ever blown up, I could be wrong on that, for tackling. Like, they never gave away a free, even when you had three of them ferociously tackling every Galway player. I think Peter Casey, when he got that hand pass off his arse on the ground away.
Yeah.
If that had been their way around, if that had been a Galway player on the floor, there's no way they would have had a chance to even look up and get that hand pass away, because you would have been completely surrounded. They would have been in on top of you. So it was just, it was an interesting observation to see. Joe Galway, it's not like they lacked work rate or they lacked effort. You can't say that either, but the tenacity of the Limerick players was just, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that, you know, looking on. You couldn't see a way out for Galway.
No.
Even when they had the ball, they looked like they might be at a little bit of a disadvantage, because if they lost it, immediately there was two, three Limerick players running off. Like, I know Colin O'Neill would have gotten man of the match for what he scored, but any other player could have at least gotten 1-5, 1-6, because there was always more than one option as well running off the shoulder.
Yeah, they were completely smothered. Like, there was so many times when you're thinking to yourself, like, they actually did the what Galway have done all year and have those four or five passes in kind of like, you know, in close quarters to free up a bit of space. They actually didn't always mess that up. Usually that first phase, they did it quite well. But then that's...
Insurance isn't one size fits all. That's why drivers have enjoyed Progressive's Name Your Price tool for years now. With the Name Your Price tool, you tell them what you want to pay, and they'll show you options that fit your budget. So whether you're picking out your first policy or just looking for something that works better for you and your family, they make it easy to see your options. Visit Progressive.com. Find a rate that works for you with the Name Your Price tool. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's never materialized, and then it's panic stations. And you mentioned that maybe they did things slightly differently. I just don't think they got a chance to establish their plan. I don't think that the wing forwards and midfielders coming from deep to help a lone full forward could happen, because they never had that primary possession. They never had that ability to build it out from the back. Cottle Mannion, in that deep lying role, never had the ball in his hand, and if he did, he was under pressure. Mm-hmm. It was just an utter disaster. And it is interesting that they couldn't change it up. But I think sometimes you saw them do things that looked a bit mad, like a lot of crossfield balls straight into a Limerick man's hand, score. You know, like you had puck outs or long clearances that went into like O'Donoghue's hand, but he'd have no one within 50 yards of him. You know, like when do you see that in senior intercounty hurling? Like the clearance, not like won by the opposition, yes, but won by the opposition under no pressure. Well, never really. And it happened constantly. This is only the first half. This is when Galway might be in the game. And it's how you kind of knew at halftime the game was over, because Limerick were always going to stretch your legs at some point. They were dominating every facet. Like.
The other thing as well is coming as deep as they did. So while that worked quite well in the semi-final, it worked very well against Dublin in the Leinster final. The unintended consequence of the way that they played it, by basically leaving Jason Rabbit as an isolated inside forward and bringing players back, is that you encourage Limerick players who were very happy to have the ball further up the pitch. So Barry Nash ends up coming further out. So once Sean Finn became the marker, it was almost like Mike Casey was the spare man back there. Will O'Donoghue was happy to hold his position. The wing backs then are pushing a little bit further forward because their markers have gone deeper, and Nash is encouraged out the pitch. Sometimes that works fine if you're dragging a corner back out who's not as good on the ball as Barry Nash is. But the last thing you want is him, conventional forward, actually with the ball multiple times during the game as well. I think the fact that Limerick are probably better than most teams at carrying the ball in transition with their defenders didn't help either. So yeah. I was surprised that Galway didn't change that up a little bit and maybe go a little bit more direct at times.
I don't know if they knew how to change it up. I think they were totally startled.
Yeah.
And I just don't think anything ever opened up for them. And that's why when they hit it long, it was terrible.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe that was the solution, but it meant you had to change your entire shape and everything like that, and they didn't do that part. So it's like, I don't know. Pat Ryan said last night, Rachel, that like they'll learn by playing Limerick more. They haven't played Limerick enough, and Limerick are at that standard so much where they might not win every All-Ireland, but Cork have had to get used to playing them. Clare have had to get used to playing them, and they've had the chance to do it. Galway maybe haven't yet, but I think they had a bit of a rude awakening, and it'd be interesting to see if they may ever made those kind of mistakes again, if they ever fail to adapt or fail to have a plan B, or give Limerick that opportunity to make Barry Nash, you know, another forward or another, you know, another runner, I suppose. And like conceding the puck out is one thing, and lots of teams concede the puck out, but you can't concede the puck out and fully retreat so that you have a ball down on top of your square every single time there's a puck out. Like, I just thought it was, God, there was a lot of crazy decisions. And I think Micheál Donoghue is, if not the best manager in hurling, he's up there with anyone who is.
Yeah, good. A lot to unpack there.
Mate. Sorry. One of my usual questions / analysis.
Yeah, is that a question? Is it a monologue? I'm not quite sure.
Just a chat.
Yeah. You clear Galway weren't at their best, and you had a couple of key players. Again, credit to the young fellas, Nyland and Rabbit, didn't faze them at all. Didn't look like they were any different playing in Croke Park in front of 82,000 people than they would have been earlier on in the league or the championship. They had players that didn't perform to their best, and like, look, that's going to happen sometimes. But I think you could have gotten anyone in the country together on Sunday to face up against that Limerick team. And there was just something about them, the way they went about their business, that they weren't going to get over the line. And I think players across the country, club managers, intercounty managers, will watch that performance and think, that's the standard. Like, you know, no one's, that many people are going to be able to replicate it, but that's what you want to work towards, that kind of work rate and effort that they had. I don't know what you do to break that down, what they could have done differently. They didn't seem to change anything up. Would I have liked to have seen Jason Rabbit, because he was winning the aerial battle. You know, he'll probably win most aerial battles, even in the second half. Just bring him into the square and launch ball down to him. I don't know. It still probably would have been a hit and hope situation, and would Limerick just have smothered him then as well? Yeah, but at least if you're losing out that ball, you're losing it in your full forward line, not in your half forward line or your midfield.
Yeah, do you put two corner forwards either side and pin back Barry Nash and know that Rabbit is going to do what Duggan did and at least break it down, if not win it, because he's that good in the air? Could sound a bit rudimentary, but like, when nothing's going for you, maybe that's the way to go. But look, as you say, I think, Rachel, you're dead right. I think Limerick win that game regardless. You're analysing how Galway can improve, thinking of that as a young team and what they can do in the future. We do a Hawkeye close call of the week, the close call that's getting the country talking. There wasn't much in the game. Rachel, you made a good point about Cottle O'Neill getting man of the match there earlier, and it was pick one of 10 or 15 when it came to Limerick, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I think so far this year we've had at least one moment. One, was it a line ball? Was the ball over the line? Was the referee's decision on the ball? Throughout that game, there was nothing. You know, the red card, I think everyone would agree that was a red card. Mm-hmm. Nothing else. So for the Hawkeye moment of the week this week, we went, which Limerick player gets man of the match? Because, yeah, it was, like you said, it was take your pick. You'd Keane Lynch, an absolute captain's performance, got two brilliant points. He came out with at least three or four balls from a group of players that you still don't know sometimes how he got them. You just see him darting out, and then he throws the ball in the hurley from up in the stand. No one else picks up a ball out of a rock like him. You had Kyle Hayes back to his absolute best, and his Kyle Hayes self. He got 2 points coming out of defence, spraying ball, set up the goal as well. Name them. Cathal O'Neill, definitely deserving, I think.
Yeah, Adam English, I thought, was really good. O'Donoghue, again, as he is most games. Dermot Burns was brilliant in the first half. Hayes, brilliant in the second half. Aaron Glan, I think we have to talk about after, like, you know, putting in, like, two mediocre games in a row by his standards. Although Nicky English was on with me on Friday talking about how, like, he wasn't scoring. That didn't necessarily mean he was playing badly. And I do understand that. But he ultimately was taken off.
He was frustrating by his own standards. But exactly. You know the one that he flings over on the Cusickstown side where he turns back onto his left and puts it over?
The first
one. It almost
score.
Felt like, you're almost kind of going, that's Aaron Gillan telling you what he can do.
Yeah, I think so too. I thought he was really good. I don't know. I think it's a really interesting point. I think maybe you get Wood 4 and that's who you give it to. But I think you're right. I think you give that to anyone. On the day for Limerick.
Gillan might have been unlucky. Like, it went under the radar that he would have set up Hegarty for the two goal chances that they had in the first half. I mean, if Hegarty scores even one or two of them, you've got Gillan assisting three goals, scoring for outrageous points.
He kept passing up easy points as well to give it to other people. It was a very kind of unselfish performance.
Like, he's trying to be the Hegarty, like, oh, I can get man of the match without scoring. It's going to be a new trend now. How many people will get man of the match next year without scoring a point?
O'Neill got my favourite score of the game, and it was more to do with Nicky Quaid than O'Neill. I don't know if you remember it. Galway got, I think, 4 points in a row after the Limerick goal. Limerick were stuck on 119 for a good while. Mm. Never a contest or anything like that, but they pulled it back to 8. And after the 4th point, you could actually see Nicky just getting annoyed. And he just ran out and really sped up and took a really quick puck out, and he hit it 100 yards into the Hogan stand. And I swear, when I say Cathal O'Neill didn't have to put his hand high to the side, or the ball didn't bounce, or the hurley wasn't needed, it just went straight into Cottle's waiting hand over the bar, and Limerick are back up and running 120, and they ended up scoring another 9 points after that. But that was my favourite score of the game. Nicky Quaid, like, what he could do with a slitter, lads, and the timing of it. I said it last night, you get very used to it. So you kind of stop getting amazed by it. Yeah. But it's incredible.
But there was two stages where comeback is probably a strong word, but Galway looked like maybe they'd settled. One was 41 minutes. I think Tom Monaghan gets a point and you're like, okay, at least they've got a score on the board. 42 minutes, Cathal O'Neill gets the goal. And then to your point again, Mannion gets the score to bring them just 8 down, and immediately Cathal O'Neill replies. So the two stages where Galway looked like maybe they could bring this back within some kind of a touching distance, Cathal O'Neill was the man to put the ball over the bar. And just on Nicky Quaid there as well, his awareness, when Morrissey came off the bench, he literally, I think he practically took the bib off, sprinted, ran straight onto the field, did a little jinky jink with Keane Lynch and caught puck out.
Yeah.
Straight off the
bench.
Hit it wide. Yeah. But Mickey
Gray's awareness, right,
for someone coming off the bench to put that ball into his hand is incredible.
He's a genius. And look, I mean, he's a man who is 37, but like, you know, a year ago he came back from a cruciate in 5 months. So I'd say he's fit enough to go for another year or two, is
100%, he? 100%. Like, he's going to be there for a while. The thing is that Limerick starting team, we were kind of talking this year about, you know, how much was left in this team with all that they've achieved. They're starting 15 at the weekend, 28 was the average age. So even some of those guys who are kind of in their early
30s. With a 37-year-old.
Well, that's it. Like, like, some of them are in ridiculously good shape. Even those who've been around since 2017, 2018, who would have broken the panel at that point. Like, it just feels like now with Colin O'Neill, with Adam English, with the Bull, with these players who've come in, there's just enough of a freshness coming into the team that I think they can go for a while. And if you're Nicky Quaid and you're in the fantastic shape he is right now, why wouldn't you go till you're 40 or maybe slightly above 40? Because ultimately, he's in goal. He's not going to need that out the field. And it's just one of those seasons from him. I think he'll be in the conversation for earlier of the year. In a weird way, when you're a goalkeeper, maybe you suffer somewhat from the fact that he didn't have a massive amount to do saving-wise in both the semi-final and the final, just because of the nature of the two games. But his distribution in the final was absolutely incredible. Some of the saves that he made earlier in the season were absolutely top class, because we tend to be a little bit recency biased when we talk about, oh, who was brilliant at the tail end of the season. Remember some of the saves that Nicky Quaid made throughout the season. Like, he was just...
The Cork game, he was man the match, wasn't he? Like, you know, that was... Yeah.
I think this has probably been one of his best seasons. Like, he will 100% be the All-Star goalkeeper. I think he is in the conversation for Player of the Year. I don't think anyone really takes that away from Hegarty, though, given the influence that Hegarty has had in massive matches. Like, I think of the Munster final where he goes to play a slightly different role in the inside forward line. You think of everyone talked about the Clare game, as Rachel's mentioned, no score, but still so influential. And at the weekend, he was at the key to everything good that happened in the Limerick forward line without, say, the finishing himself. I think he probably gets Hurler of the Year, but Nicky and Will O'Donoghue deserve a big conversation when it comes to this as well. Like, Declan Hannan leaves, one of the best sixes that we've ever seen. Will O'Donoghue's had a year and a half now at six and has barely made a mistake in the whole time he's been there.
He's been brilliant, and he's a different player than Hannan, and he's getting better all the time at it as well. Even, like, it's hard to think of Will O'Donoghue as getting better at hurling, but he's getting better as a six, like. And he's been unbelievable. I thought he was so good against Clare, lads. I thought it went under the radar how much Hegarty was at one end, but it was Lynch and O'Donoghue at the other end that closed things up. Mike Casey helped, obviously. Dermot Burns having an unbelievable season. But just they strangled Clare the way they did Cork for or Galway for the whole 70 minutes this week. And O'Donoghue, I thought, was at the fore of that. Like, and I think Dermot Burns has to be in the consideration as well. Like, you know, and
really back to form this year.
Yeah.
Their green wall have been incredible all season. So
now, on Rachel's initial point to man the match, I think absolutely throw a blanket over all of them. They were brilliant. I'd go for Lynch, I have to say. I think when you kind of have that sort of performance where everybody plays well, I think it's the captain's leader performance. He was at his best, I thought.
His lovely point at the end was almost like the icing on the cake for the performance that was there.
Yeah.
And again, even when he came on in the semi-final, like, he basically comes on after the goal that Clare scored. And he just added that extra kind of layer. I know we call him a facilitator, but he is the guy who sets the tempo. He reminds me a bit, I remember Kieran Carrier saying he's like the Messi of hurling. He kind of reminds me of being the Xavi of hurling to a certain extent as well, whereby everything that Limerick do well, it's often a Keane Lynch catch or a Keane Lynch break of a tackle or a Keane Lynch picking the right pass. Like, he's just so, so good at just keeping it moving.
Rachel, I know you have to go because there's Camogie semi-finals interviews today. Myself and Will are going to just have a brief discussion about the season as a whole. Where are you on all of that before you go? I feel like there's a bit of panic. We didn't have a good All-Ireland final. We had good semi-finals. We basically didn't have much else before that. I don't know. I'm fairly optimistic. I think these things come and go.
I spoke to Keith Ricken last week and he said he's been... Thank you. He's a fascinating man. I could sit down if you could. I think I don't want to talk about her too much because I know there's been so much talk about her. But if you could get herself and Caroline Currid in a room, God, what would come out of that room would just be unbelievable. But he said that 2 years ago he was in the kind of end of year county board meeting, and they were saying 2 or 3 years ago, football is in crisis. What are we going to do? He said this year he came in with the All Ireland Minor Trophy. Got the standing ovation. Everyone is talking about how fantastic football is and hurling is in crisis and what are we going to do to fix hurling in the county. There's a 2 or 3 year swing there. So I don't think we're I don't think we're in too much of a bad state. I know there's so many points to be made for developing the other counties, but the game itself, I think, is in a pretty good place. But I'm open to be proven completely wrong about that in terms of, you know, development and having competitive games. Was it a really exciting year? No, not really. You know, the two semi-finals brought it back to life. And just because Limerick were so good yesterday, it was, as a watching from a neutral, obviously it wasn't the most exciting game, but you were nearly just so in awe of what Limerick were doing. It was still interesting to watch. You still wanted to see what was going on, almost. What are they going to do next? As opposed to being a very boring game.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, didn't have a flash for some reason. I don't know why I did it to myself, but yesterday after coming home from the Winners Hotel, I watched the 2024 All-Ireland final between ourselves and Clare in extra time, and you're thinking, I know that's a high bar, but that was a great game of hurling. That was a great season. So was it one for the ages? No, but still had some cracking games and lots of talking points. So look, won't be burying the game just yet. And now I really do better go, because we'll give it a shout out. Double header in Temple Stadium this Saturday. We have Cork and Tipperary and Galway and Kilkenny battling out for the place in the All Ireland final. So myself and Ash Maher of Dublin will be here bringing you all the coverage of that. And thanks very much for having me, lads. It's sad that it's the last.
I know. Thanks for everything all summer, and we'll be talking to you, I'm sure, about those Camogie semi-finals. And there still is a few more weeks to go in the come on season. I don't know. What's the link word between hurling and Camogie?
I think come on is fine. Yeah. Charlie Burns used it the weekend when he was about to hand the trophy over
Small ball season. Yeah. All right. Garvagan, Rachel.
I did wonder where he was going. It was one of those rare moments where Charlie got a little bit lost in his preamble, where he kind of went, when you pick up a come on in hurling, you want to be Keane Lynch. I was like, all right.
Well, it's funny. My daughter was at it was boys and girls, and it was like, you know, what, 4 to 13 or something, summer camp last week, but it was called a hurling summer camp. Mm. So we were but she was in a girls group, obviously. So and it was the first time they've been divided, because it's a nursery thing and it's boys and girls. But it was very much a kind of kept saying, like, you know, you're going to hurling camp. And it was you're playing hurling. And it's like, you kind of have to keep saying to yourself, Camogie, it's the same game, but it has a different name, and it's just like, it's just awkward.
Loads of Camogie players you talk to will say things like, oh, I'm going out to hurl, or we were hurling last night, as opposed to
Verb is hurling, the sport is Camogie.
We weren't Camogieing last night, is not what they say. So, look, again, I think it's...
Playing a match is what Camogie people in my life would normally say. You know, you wouldn't normally hear, like, it's certainly not Camogie's not a verb.
No, but, it should be two good semi-finals at the weekend, particularly that first one with Galway and Kilkenny, the group winners from Group 2 should be really good. So looking forward to seeing Rachel and Ash's take on those games.
Yeah, absolutely. So just wider then on what I do agree with Rachel there, actually, I have to say. I think you're always in danger of throwing the baby out with the bad water. I think the fact that we have this John Myler thing, in some ways it almost worries me that it's happening on the back of a poor inter-county year, because will there be too many changes? Is there too much going on? For example, I watched really out for in the final this idea of, like, the ball back to the goalkeeper is this horrible devil. I really don't see that. That doesn't happen that much. And when it does, it's not even all that negative. I just don't see it as an issue.
Yeah.
Galway could have done with doing that a bit more, actually, at the weekend. They weren't, like, I don't have a problem with possession hurling.
Yeah,
if it's done right, because Limerick shows you that there's a downside to it as well. I don't know. I watched the 1980 final on YouTube.
Go on.
Limerick and Galway.
Bit of scalping, I'd say, in that one.
It is. Like,
your life into your own
hands. Not to denigrate any of the skills or anything like that, because they were unbelievably skillful. But they're using these big, long sticks, and which I would have grown up with. It was a longer hurl, you know what I mean? And
you're mostly meant for a hurl up to your hip. You see Keane Lynch walking off the weekend, it's like a wand.
It's almost to his knee, But it was just this, like, whacking away the ball into possession, just hitting the ball on the ground all the time. And just thinking to myself, like, there was one time that, like, the Limerick fullback was running back towards his goal with no one near him. And because of the danger of that, he just whipped it out to the sideline, And it was like, God, we got the ball back. And you're like, what's the point of that? Now, it's hard to put your head back into it. My point is, we go through all these phases. They change, whatever. What Galway were doing at the weekend kind of looked terrible because they weren't able to do it properly. It didn't look terrible, I don't think, when they did it against Cork a couple of weeks ago.
If it's effective, it's very, very different. And by the way, I agree with you. You don't even have to go back to the 80s. you look at 90s hurling, the amount of time that players will just double on the ball or will just whip it with a ground stroke. And nowadays, you would be shouting at them going, why are you handing possession back? And don't get me wrong, I love if a player pulls off a lovely ground stroke or there's a tackle or whatever it might be. But when you look back at it now, it feels archaic compared to...
You want it to be a pass or something, though, yeah, now, don't you? Like, as opposed to like just whacking it, like, you know?
Yeah, and like, how many times has a wing back in the day kind of almost put it up into a 50-50 to let your wing forward or your corner forward try and beat the man, as opposed to now they're trying to put it into constructive areas? It's just, again, it's just a different game. The game has evolved now.
I do think, though, we need to make it, like... I think both teams threw the ball, I'd say, 30 times each at the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's... And I... Whether there's a like minute skill to it or whatever it might be, it's irrelevant, really. Like, it's relevance to its current legality.
Yeah.
But can you clean that up? Of course you can. You can make that a clear strike motion. And I think that makes it easier for referees. It makes it less random. It makes it to the point where they're like, look, everything's a throw, so I'm not going to call it an All-Ireland final.
Mm.
But, you know, like William Buckley's ball through to... whoever it was, that Barrett, was
really
it?
Stuck in your craw.
But what I'm saying is, it was such an obvious throw, and it came to the point where we're watching it in a slow motion replay, and even the commentators don't mention it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's just a case of, it's like, it's very easy to underhand throw a ball a slitter size accurately 15, 20 yards.
Yeah.
That is not a skill, to be honest. Anyone who's ever had a ball in their hand is able to do something like that.
You made an important
point.
Any
tennis player in the world would be able to do that. Hurlers need to be able to hand pass the ball.
Yeah.
I do think that's just something they could fix, and I think it would change how the game is played a little bit, because it wouldn't be as easy to get out of situations then.
I think as well, and again, you made the point well there, that it's refereed differently at different times of the year. So it always tends to happen early stage of the league that you'll get a few of these pulled, maybe even more than one a game, and you start thinking, okay, a referee is being instructed that this year they're actually going to be far more insistent that there's a clear separation between hand and ball with a hand pass. It clearly, there's some kind of direction coming from Croke Park. And then as the year goes on, you'll very rarely see them called.
But I wonder, is there a rule change or a rule clarification beyond referee's interpretation or what a referee crackdown? I wonder, does it need something else? And I think that I think something will change in that, but I just wonder, will they do too much? And the thing about it is, you've got Tipperary in their familiar post-All-Ireland transition.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be better again. There's a lot of young players in that team. You've got Limerick still at where they are. Cork will have a say. Galway are definitely coming. Kilkenny have Henry. Dermot McGrath's got into Wexford. Dublin are still improving.
Looks like Steve Malumphy's going to take over Waterford. I think they had a better year this year than they had the previous
year.
They're
relevant,
Clare, obviously, it's going to be a bit of a transition for them with the players that are leaving, the new players are coming in. But what a good time to be bringing through.
I don't know how many players are leaving.
I think there'll be a few.
So Shane O'Donnell is gone.
I'd be surprised if John Conlon.
John Conlon will be gone, right? Yeah. And that's a huge impact on the group as well as on the team, right? David McInerney is 33. Might give another go. Don't know.
Potentially. Look, I don't want to retire anyone here. I'm just mindful.
But what I'm saying is, if you have lads, together. I don't think Kelly's going to go. I don't think Cotton Malone is going to go. I don't think Duggan will go, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have that. That's like a good group of lads in their early 30s, right? You keep most of them, and you start bringing in this an under-20 team that won a minor title and All-Ireland with a lot of good hurlers on it.
You give Stritch more game time as
there's
a starter.
There's a transition. Yeah. And there's young players that have come through, like Sean Ryan, like Dermot Stritch, this year, who've established themselves in the team. Niall O'Farrell, who got so much better as the year went on, so much so that by the time he's playing in the semi-final, if he'd played like that all year, he's in all-star consideration.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, as a wing back as opposed to the centre back he was playing earlier in the year. So it's all just very, we don't know what's going to happen. I just feel like we could be in for another kind of great era, not too distant future. We've had 5 teams in the last 3 All-Ireland finals.
Yeah, I know. And like, it's one of those things as well. We have to take everything through the prism that Limerick have been incredible. And like, them not winning the last 2 years was a surprise about years. Like, we're talking about generational teams here who have been sweeping up trophies. And yet at the same time, there are teams who have beaten them. And there are teams who have been close to the dance. Like, I think the wider point about the championship this year is, I think there was only 3 games that were inside 3 points across the round robin and across the knockout stages.
Yeah.
So obviously that's not helpful. And a few years ago, it seemed every game was close.
Is that coincidence?
It's hard to know.
I don't know either, yeah.
The sample size is very small. It's only one season.
Small championship.
I think if we get back to another championship next season and say we don't have competitive games and we've loads of blowouts,
then you look at things.
Then I think you have to.
I think that's fair, though. I think it's fair. I just don't think you take a sample size of 1 year and throw it all out. It would, would be kind of how I would look at it. It's like we're always in the height of everybody giving out. And I think most of the time is like the way to do things is let the bluster die down and see what you really need to do. And sometimes I think we can be a bit reactive to those sort of things and actually go and change.
I tend to look at things with a slightly different lens as well. So I look at the fact that Waterford look like they're coming back to a more resurgent position. I look at Offaly obviously making improvements. When you've got teams at the lower ends of both of the championships getting better, that is a good thing for the greater game. The problem is that everyone wants to see the very, very top teams play classic matches and be incredibly close. And I do appreciate that's obviously what the neutral wants to see. But look, next season you might have a load of close games between the very, very top teams. And next thing we're saying the hurling is amazing again. So
you mentioned Offaly there. That was one of the better, one of the highlights of the season, I think, was Offaly's performance against it's Kilkenny, I suppose, probably Dublin, for the Kilkenny, most part. Westford, Dublin, yeah. Dublin, I suppose we were probably a little bit less aware of it at the time. It felt like more of a Dublin issue than an Offaly issue. That turned out not to be true. And then obviously getting the job done against Kildare and Wexford in the last two games when they needed to, Wexford in particular, was brilliant. And they got to the quarterfinal, and that's amazing. Got out of Leinster. They remind me of something that I was talking about last night, just to finish on Limerick, right? What John Kiely has done and this group have done. In the, how many years hurling has gone now, 140, in the last 90 of them, we have had a hierarchy of Cork, Tipperary and Limerick. Cork, Tipperary and Kilkenny.
The big three.
We've had Limerick probably on their own in the next tier, with a Wexford maybe, probably with them, you would say, on and off.
You're right and clear off here, go on.
No, I'm not. I'm saying that what Offaly and Galway did in the 1980s was put themselves up to that Limerick tier. Mm. And Galway stayed there. Offaly are trying to get back there again now, right? But Galway kind of stayed there forever from the 1980s, where they'll always be relevant, they'll always have a say, they'll win the odd All-Ireland. Clare in the 90s put themselves onto that tier too and have maintained that place. There's very few tier changes in how we look at hurling, but the hardest one to get to is the top three, and nobody has ever done it. I think until this Limerick team, and I think what they've done now is generational. I don't think we'll ever not look at Limerick again as one of the big four now, as opposed to the previous big three. And I think they'll start climbing up the Roll of Honour, and they'll close down the other two. They're not even a million miles behind Tip now, if you look in the grand scheme of things. Tip have won a lot of All Irelands in the last few years, though. That's the problem there, but. But I think if Limerick go, obviously they're minor champions and so on, if they went on a run there where they weren't competitive for a few years or they weren't, it'd be more the crisis in Limerick more than, oh, we're back to that again. I think there's an assumption now that Limerick are at the top tier of the game forevermore. And if you take, like, that's by winning six All-Irelands in 9 years, obviously. But if you take that as an achievement of Kiely, this group of players, Kinnerk, Caroline Curd, JP, whoever it might be, it's a historical thing to do. Nobody has ever done it.
I think as well, the fact that Limerick have got their structures correct really since about 2008, 2009, which has become kind of a revolving production line of incredible players. The fact that their underage setup is as good as it is. The fact that the universities are so good around the Limerick area at being really good nurseries for hurlers, almost like a finishing school for the players who are coming through. You add all that in, like I was in Article Reach earlier this year, and you consider how many good players they're bringing through either side of the Limerick-Clare border. With hurling being so hot in Limerick right now, you would imagine the foundation is there for the next couple of generations of Limerick hurlers who are going to come through. It's very difficult to see this fall off anytime soon. It's probably not going to be this dominant period, 7 months or six All-Irelands in nine seasons. That's just kind of unbelievable one-off stuff. But you would find it very difficult to find Limerick at any point fall off and go back to the pack. To that. Maybe
no, I don't think they're part of the pack anymore. Like, you know, I think they're
right up there with the big three, aren't they? Yeah. So like, it's very, very difficult to see. Carlin Cure's an interesting point, by the way, because Paul Murphy, we dispatched him down to Limerick last week for the previews, and he was chatting to Richie McCarthy, former Limerick hurler, and he gave a slight insight into what Carlin Cure did. Apparently one of the most interesting things she did was, ahead of one of the All-Ireland finals a few years ago, I think it might have been the 2018 final, they put a bullshit board up in the dressing room, and everyone had to put every rumour or bit of nonsense or something that was on their mind before they went to the final. They aired it all on match week and had it all out the way before they got to the weekend. So I think it's no coincidence she's come back in and has given them just that mental edge again. I'm sure a lot of this has been banked up over the last few years, and it's not just because Caroline is part of the team now. We heard the cheer that went around Croke Park when Keane Lynch said, we have the mother of the team back with us again this year. It's a huge backroom team. John Kiely was very keen to point out how important they all are and their various different facets of how they put this team together. But Caroline Keogh is obviously a key part of this too, and having her back in is just giving them that extra little bit of edge.
All right. Limerick, All-Ireland champions once again, and probably not the greatest hurling season of all time, but bloody hell, I'll be sad to not have it on my Sundays anymore.
Sure. The only thing about Limerick is, I think they were top of the tree on this, except for a few weeks. Like, you know when Cork beat them in round robin, we were Cork top for a little while, then Limerick retook them before the Munster final. I think Limerick were basically top throughout the league and top at the end of the season. So almost unanimous for the whole season, Limerick have been top of this power rank.
Absolutely. They won the treble. They actually won the quadruple, I believe. They won the Munster Senior League, did they?
I saw someone point out to
me. If you're going to win everything, throw in the old pre-season.
I was using
the
19 out of 20 stat, you know, for John Kiely. Yeah. And a Limerick supporter pointed out in the live chat last night that actually, if you include Munster Senior Hurling League finals, he's 22 out of 24. So
there's a final to that, is there?
Yeah, so don't sell the man short.
Okay, well, that's like, I don't count when Villa win against Borussia Mönchengladbach in the Nike Stadium or something like that. Okay, power rankings on Off the Ball with Harvey Norman, official stats sponsor of the GAA. And don't forget, Harvey Norman have given us two tickets. In fact, I believe two pairs of tickets, so we might have two winners to give away. If you've any issues, this is the football final, obviously, on Sunday. Skip the headline there. Mayo Kerry in Croke Park. If you've any issues with Will's selections for the hurling, or even Tommy's last week, we extended the same grace to the hurling final tickets last week, that you could disagree with Will's previous selection. I wrote in about Clare not being at number four, but turns out I'm not allowed to enter. And I didn't get a ticket to the All-Ireland final, by the way. You think of us here above a nose talk, as you call us, you know, that we're up here, you know, with our, on our gravy train.
I'd be delighted.
I couldn't get a ticket.
If it's a hurling aficionado from Kerry or Mayo, who are watching the hurling power rankings and win a ticket to the football final, that's the dream.
I love it. Anyway, you just send us a WhatsApp, 087-9180-180, or enter at offtheball.com if you prefer to email us, and you can win tickets to the All-Ireland final in Croke Park this Sunday. And it will be our final power rankings of the season next Tuesday, when we'll be back to look back on that All-Ireland final and see if Kerry are still number one, as they have been for the whole year, or Mayo can come from the depths of hell. I think they were as low as 14 at one stage.
Tommy.
Can they get up there? So we'll find that out next Tuesday.
The Power Rankings on Off the Ball with Harvey Norman, official staff sponsor of the GAA.